the way of the future. The way of the future. The way of the future. The way of the future.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jabe.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2004 Oscar award-winning movie The Aviator, directed by Martin Scorsese. Now, we had talked previously when you guys asked what was on the calendar, when we were confirming what was on the calendar, I think we discovered this movie was on none of our lists. Is that correct?
I think so. I don't know how it ended up on the calendar. Yeah. Maybe it was a typo?
For some reason, I thought this was a Brother Jay movie.
I'd never seen it.
Yeah. Drew was the only one who had seen it.
I didn't put it on the calendar.
Yeah, well, I put it in the calendar, so I guess it's my movie, but I had never seen it before. So, first impressions, Brother Jay, The Aviator.
I actually thought this was an okay movie. It was long. Don't get me wrong. It was a long way to go. But, the movie kept going, and it kept my interest, and I was kind of fascinated by the unspooling of Mr. Hughes, so... I don't know. I kind of liked it.
Drew?
I didn't really like this movie. I think the story is really interesting. So just the history is fascinating. But I found the performances to be really annoying and hard to sit through. And I don't think on purpose. Like, you're supposed to be uncomfortable for a lot of it. But like I found the Kate Blanchett portrayal of Katharine Hepburn just be really annoying, and the Leonardo DiCaprio tickiness that got really old. And then they had really fun actors like John C. Reilly and Alec Baldwin, who really did nothing. They were I guess criminally underused in this movie, I think. But you had a fun little role for Alan Alda playing a not very likable guy. So, I mean, this movie was all right. I did not enjoy having to sit through 3 hours of it, especially already knowing the story this time around. So I saw it when it first came out on video, and I thought it was okay at the time. Never really thought about it again. It does have a very memorable ending. So that's what I always thought of whenever The Aviator was mentioned. It's the way of the future. It's the way of the future. So that was an affecting ending. But the rest of it is just kind of a slog for, I don't think, enough payoff.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with both of you. I thought the acting was great. I thought the film was beautiful, and I kind of admire Scorsese doing the thing where, as the movie progressed in time, his color, when he did the color correction and color treatment of the movie, he made it to look period. Like, he focused on, like, the very beginning of the movie, it's very, like, as if it were shot at the time. And then it got progressively brighter and crisper as you went along. And so by the end, it was like technical.
Because it was kind of brown. It was kind of brown tone in the beginning.
Yeah, it was like there was I don't have the actual processes written down, but he took an eye when he did his post production on it, going through and making the colors look period
appropriate.
Yeah. I loved the strong female characters. I really liked Kate Blanchett as Katharine Hepburn. That was great. At first, I was annoyed a little bit, but then I realized, oh, yeah, this fits in my mind as a young Katharine Hepburn, because I remember old Katharine Hepburn. So I can see her as young Katharine Hepburn growing into old Katharine Hepburn. And I was totally impressed by Kate Beckinsale as Ava Gardner. And she did a good job, and the character was really strong.
She was good.
And you're right. I mean, Alec Baldwin was criminally underused. I thought Alan Alda was great. He plays a great bad guy. But yeah, there was, for me, it was too long. I couldn't figure out whether it was because they tried to tell too many stories or because there was just so much Martin Scorsese auteur bullshit. Like, the color correction thing is auteur bullshit, to be sure. But all of the, like, music got really old for me. I mean, I like the Wainwrights, but all the weird, like, jazzy, big band music becoming kind of a character, like, alongside DiCaprio's madness of hues. It's like, oh, bullshit. And having
See, I love that.
Yeah, see, that's I was by the end of it, I was angry at it. And when I was picking out art for this, I was going to just have a big bottle of urine for our cover art. But it was too long, although they cut out Jane Lynch as Amelia Earhart. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, the whole Amelia Earhart something. I mean, where Jane Lynch, of all people, could be Amelia Earhart. It's great. It would have been another great female character. It had a bunch of, the cast is pretty great. I mean, Leonardo DiCaprio, I think, looked a lot like Howard Hughes, also a lot like Brad Pitt toward the end of the movie.
I thought so too. At one point, I thought he could have been morphed into Brad Pitt.
Yeah, that little mustache and slick back hair, he had Brad Pitt's face. But at the beginning, I thought I was irritated by him. I thought he was just Arnie pretending to be Howard Hughes.
I actually wrote down, at one point in the movie, at the climax, when there was an injury with an explosion, I wrote, match in the gas tank, boom, boom.
Yeah, I thought Alec Baldwin was great, but he played Alec Baldwin. I liked, like stunt casting was pretty fun. Gwen Stefani as Jean Harlow, Jude Law as Errol Flynn, Adam Scott, Francis Conroy as the Mrs. Hepburn, Brent Spiner.
Yeah,
oh, Brent Spiner is great. The Hepburn family seemed like a nightmare. They were the worst.
You mean as far as the worst people in the world?
Yes. Like, you were totally on Hughes' side when he just gets up and walks away.
Oh, yeah.
They were terrible.
Well, and, okay, I thought that was a good scene, but I think it was also the French plantation scene in Apocalypse Now. You could have just gotten rid of it and it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
Save yourself 5 minutes of bullshit. Keep the story going. Also, the fact that this movie opens with him filming Hell's Angels and going over budget and having a big deal and thing, and like, it just went on too long.
It's overemphasizing his mania and the manic obsession he had with attention to detail and how he wouldn't let things go, regardless of what it might cost him financially and personally.
Yeah, luckily they didn't talk about that anymore during the movie. Oh, wait. Every scene they hammered this point home. I'm like, come on. And you know, okay, but you had fun stuff in there. You had that whole Jane Russell movie about tits. That was fine. That was cool. Okay. The movie opens with the creepiest scene in a movie I have probably ever seen. Of him being washed by his mother.
Yeah.
Way too old.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy.
Quarantine.
Yes. And it kind of glosses over, like, I wanted to go back and look at the history, and then I thought, no, the movie told so many stories, it's like, I don't even care at this point. Because I'm sure he was an amazing guy. But to me, they were trying to tell the story of him as a filmmaker and him as as the aviator and him as his relationship with women. All at the same time. They could have picked a lane. I mean, I guess the aviation thing runs through it, but still. Pick a lane, people.
You're not really arguing for this movie very much.
Oh, I didn't like the movie. I'm sorry. Did I mention it was a beautiful movie, but I thought it was not great. I mean, it had all the great pieces to it, but I don't even recommend this movie. I recommend certain scenes. Like I said, I think Kate Blanchett was great. I think Kate Beckinsale's... I now have more respect for Ava Gardner. I was, I think, appropriately appalled at Faith Dameron, the 15-year-old girlfriend. And that was another really uncomfortable, creepy scene. Like, did we need to know that Howard Hughes was a creep? It didn't really matter. I mean, he still went crazy. You could have skipped the creepy parts and just had him go crazy.
Yeah, and if you're going to talk about the creepy parts, why not talk about the fact that he was a horrible racist?
Oh, yeah, see? They don't mention that at all.
And anti-Semite, I believe.
Oh, are you confusing him with Lindbergh, though?
Well, maybe all aviators at that time were.
Maybe. Yeah, listener Connie, I think I mentioned before that all aviators are pretty pompous and self-important. Are they also racist by nature? Discuss. We welcome your comments at show at Not a Creepy Way. Or call our subscription canceling hotline at... Yeah. Okay, for the record, not all pilots are... assholes. Like all, also, not all doctors/surgeons are pompous jackasses. But some are.
I have a story in that vein.
Oh, excellent. Tangent time. We're going to have some tangent time.
I'm trying also, to think
of... Spruce Goose, by the way, is in a museum here in Oregon, so...
Yeah, oh, and, you know, how big an achievement was the Spruce Goose? I mean, it flew... Once, you know, there are aircraft called the Hercules. They are not...
Well, had it been utilized, it would have been the greatest thing ever. I mean, the need for it at conception was great. The need for it at creation was unfortunately not.
Well, so was the point just to prove it could fly, and then he wasn't going to really... Since it wasn't going to go into production, they didn't need to go any further than that?
Right. Because everybody said they accused him of wasting money on something that was never going to work. His point was, it'll work. Look, you know, you bastards. The thing will work. I'm not wasting anybody's money. I created something that worked. Just because it's obsolete now because you've decided to end the war, which is good, doesn't mean that I wasted money. It just means that you decided not to have more of this product around.
Also, Howard Hughes is not a hero, even in this movie. I mean, he's deeply flawed and, you know, being Mr. Creepo as well as being mentally ill. But even at the end, his big rousing Mr. Smith goes to Washington speech that defeats Alan Alda at his own game, despite being really uncomfortable during the hearing. He still basically, his point is, I'm not a war profiteer. Everybody did this. We're all bad guys. Good day, sir.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, but he also made the point that he spent his own wealth to accomplish a lot of this. It didn't get him very far, monetarily.
I suppose, but defrauding the American government and wasting your own money isn't really...
Well, how is he defrauding the government?
Defrauding. I guess failing.
Yeah.
Failing to fulfill a contract.
Again, when you say he failed to deliver, but that wasn't true. He did deliver.
No.
He was stopped from the project before completion.
Yeah, the contracts were canceled before delivery.
Yeah.
Does Hughes Aircraft still exist?
Hughes Aviation? I don't know.
Because it definitely was a big deal. I mean, Howard Hughes was a big deal.
It was sold in the 80s, wasn't it?
Oh, maybe. Because when did Howard Hughes die?
You know, for the longest time when I was growing up, I got, this is going to sound like a bad joke. It's not. I would get confused, and people, when they would mention like how crazy Howard Hughes was, I kept thinking of the dude from WKRP in Cincinnati.
Howard Hessman?
Yes.
Dr. Johnny Fever?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's awesome. Booger.
So Hughes died in 76. Hughes Aviation was eventually sold to Raytheon. Although Hughes Electronics was sold to General Motors in 85. Hughes Aircraft in 92.
Raytheon doesn't have any sketchy contracts with the government. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. No. So, it turns out government military contracts with the government may have been sketchy forever.
Hughes Electronics introduced DirecTV.
Oh, excellent.
In 95, Hughes Aircraft sold its technology products division to an investor led by Citicorp. In 97, GM transferred the Delco Electronics and its Delphi Automotive business. Later that year, the assets of Hughes Aircraft were sold to Raytheon. So in 97, Hughes eventually looks like they were folded into Raytheon for $10 billion.
Mm-hmm. And in 98, Skynet became aware.
Exactly. Exactly.
In 2000, the Boeing company purchased 3 units within Hughes Electronics Corp. Hughes Space Communication, Hughes Electron Dynamics, and Spectralab. So the Boeing, the 4 pieces joined Boeing Satellite Systems, later to become the Satellite Development Center, part of Boeing Integrated Defense Systems. Finally, in 2003, the remaining parts of Hughes Electronics, DirecTV, DirecTV Latin America, Pan Am Sat, Hughes Network Systems were purchased by News Corp, renamed the DirecTV Group.
Ah, excellent. You get that NFL package for a whole year. For free. Actually, I have nothing to say about DirecTV. I'm sure it's a lovely service. I use their competitor. But if I could clip all the cables, I would.
Yeah, I don't have any cable now.
I heard a rumor that our only cable provider in Anchorage is no longer going to be offering cable TV soon. It could have been just a horrible rumor, but it was also sold to an out-of-state company for lots of money. I think some Colorado company. Oh, yeah, and all our bills got more as of this month for internet. But that's okay. It's still competitive. Anyway, so, Drew, you were tangenting off to Doctor Talk. Doc Talk.
No, it was still Aviator Talk.
Oh, Aviator Talk. Do tell.
Did we even want to talk about the plot of this movie?
Oh, we could do that first. This is a good time to do your Aviator tangent.
Well, it was piggybacking on your Aviators are pompous douchebags supposition.
Connie, those are Drew's words. I said pompous. I did not say douchebags.
Sorry, that might be already transitioning into my story.
No more questions, Congressman.
I was at a gathering where my wife expected me to be social with people, which is it's one of those times where she actually has to talk to me in the car about being nice and polite and making small talk with people. Basically, the don't be weird speech from American Beauty. So I went in and I actually went out of my way, out of my comfort zone, and like introduced myself to people and even tried to remember names, which I'm terrible at. And then instead of just going off and hiding in a corner and not talking to anybody, which I'm perfectly comfortable doing, I actually like sought out people and tried to make small talk with them. And like the second attempt I had at this, I know like all the extroverts who are listening to this think that this is crazy, that it sounds like this much work, but this is a lot of work for me. And, so I just kind of forced myself into a conversation with these two guys, and one of them was talking about how, he just finally purchased a plane, his own plane. So I was trying to make small talk with him. I was like, oh, how long have you owned your plane? And he's like, well, I mean, all my family owns planes. I was like, okay. Thought that was a weird answer, but I was like, all right. And you've had yours for a while. I was like, I just bought it recently. And he didn't really seem like he wanted to talk to me. which just made me want to talk to him more. Because I'm an a-hole. so I was like, I asked him, like, so what does it take to, like, keep up with a plane? I imagine there's a lot of maintenance involved. And I don't know if it was the way I phrased it, but his response was not what I was expecting. He didn't talk to me about what you actually have to do to maintain a plane. He just started telling me how much everything cost. And he's like, well, you have to do the annual, which is a couple grand, and then you got your monthly fees, which run about, you know, $500 for this or that. And so he was just like giving me an itemized bill without any details.
Because the likelihood is he doesn't do any of that work. He pays somebody to do that. So he doesn't probably know what's involved.
Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe I was overly sensitive, but it just it felt like he was trying to big time me. And so I was like,
was he giving you the hi-hat?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. A little bit of the tom-tom.
Your description of merging in the crowd made me feel cold and clammy.
Well, after that, I was like, all right, I'm done. I'm going to go stand in the corner, not talk to anybody, and make other people around me uncomfortable with my silence. But I'll be fine.
Well, okay, here's a question. I know you want to be vague, but so this guy was a pilot by avocation, but was he, I don't know, perhaps an engineer by vocation?
No.
Okay.
Worse. He was a salesman.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, not a very, yeah, okay, strange. You'd think you'd be better at small talk to being a salesman.
I was not a potential client.
He was giving figures. That's totally salesman.
He should have been able to get Drew into a plane by that afternoon. What'll it take to get you in a plane? Well, apparently $5,000 a year and $500 a month.
And 10 pounds less.
Fucking A. Yeah, social stuff is the worst. Because I don't see myself as an introvert, but I certainly feel that way in like a social... I mean, I'm just a social misfit. Like, I hate small talk. I don't do it well. Drew actually once yelled at me when he was a teenager for being an asshole because I couldn't deal with small talk. This is all we're all renting videos. Do you remember the story, Drew?
No.
We went to Video City and our local friendly neighborhood movie rental place to rent VHS tapes. Young kids, consult your favorite search engine to see what a VHS tape is. It's something
you watch the giant red barn red warehouse that smelled of carpet cleaner perpetually.
Yes, and the other had a little. Well, I don't want to go into. I guess it's maybe. yeah, no, but it was a fixture of our life.
You're going to talk about the porn closet?
No. Although that's always great. I mean, whenever you're talking about video stores, because remember the apartment I had before I moved in with you was on the fifth floor of a building where the first floor was a video store. Turns out you probably shouldn't rent porn from people you will see every single day. Anyway, so I remember, so we went in there and for whatever reason we rented like a bunch of Saturday Night Live best of, like best of Dan Aykroyd, best of Eddie Murphy, best of Chevy Chase or something. And so we bring them up there and it's Drew and I hand the lady the cases because she had to go get the actual videos or whatever. And she's like, yeah, so you like comedies? I'm like, yeah. Like, he's like, oh, yeah, because you got, you know, they're, you know, these are awesome. Like, okay, well, they'll be, what, $9, whatever, you'll see on Tuesday. Okay. And as we were walking out, or when he got in the car, just like, you're a jerk. She was trying to talk to you, and you just shut her down. What kind of person are you? You have no social skills. Like, okay, sorry, leave me alone, man. But it was all true. That was the thing. It was perfectly true. You were absolutely apt in your description. And right to call me on it as a brother. So I have taken that. And every time someone says, even just minimal encouragers, I always try to... Although... So here's a little tangent on a tangent. So as part of my getting onto a plane in a month thing, I've been walking for exercise. And I have a treadmill. I bought a treadmill several years ago when I was actually walking for exercise before. Turns out walking for exercise works really well for me. Does wonderful things. I hate it. I don't like exercise. I like eating shitty food. So if I can't eat shitty food and have to exercise, it's fine. It, like I said, it gets lots of benefits. I will probably live longer. But as I told my daughter and wife, you don't want to go walking with me when I'm walking for exercise. I'm not very pleasant. But whatever, you know, I got a thing. And I have a treadmill, but I don't walk on the treadmill, partly because we're hoarders and I can't put it down to the ground. It's not folded up at the moment. But also because... Because when I go out walking, especially when I begin my walking thing like I am now, I'm in the first couple weeks of it, you know, 20 minutes into walking, my feet don't feel great, you know, or like I got a weird like hip thing going on because I'm not used to working those muscles. And, you know, if I start out too fast, I could, you know, my ankles, which have always been sort of a problem, will get all sore and weird. And so if I was on a treadmill after 20 minutes and everything hurts and I'm not feeling very happy about life and I'm kind of angry, I'll just get off the treadmill. But if I am 20 minutes away from home, I know I have at least 20 minutes of walking back home. So I might as well do like my actual full walk, you know, or whatever. So that works out well. But so where I walk, though, is unfortunately in a fairly public area along a pretty heavily traveled road. So now I have people from work who are like, oh, I saw you walking the other day. I was going to honk. But I'm like, yeah, you would have got the finger from me. Because I'm not in a happy mood when I'm walking. But I was stopped waiting for a light to cross the street. And it was a good opportunity to like, you know, stretch a little bit or whatever. And this bicyclist comes up next to me. And he's like, yeah, working on your beach body? I'm like,
yeah. Yeah, Laura Palmer style. You're next.
Yeah, no, and so I'm like, yeah, something like that, you know. And I, for the entire way home, after, and he had a smile on his face. He, I'm sure he thought he was super clever, because I'm a gigantic fat man walking, obviously for exercise. And so he pedals away. And I'm thinking, okay, so what should I have said? Like, what would have been the appropriate thing to say? Pushing him off his bicycle wouldn't have been a good idea because, you know, after walking for an hour, my ankles hurt and I don't want to fight and I can't run. So, you know, there's not that. So engaging in violence, although it may be my first choice, is probably not the best choice. I guess I could have referred to him and like looked at his bike and asked him if he was just training for the Tour de France, but now nah, that's just reaching. I don't know. I don't have a good response to that except, yeah, nice. Yeah.
Yell after him. Why? Well, the jerk store called. They want you back.
Yeah, yeah. No. I wasn't. I was just thinking. I wasn't like, oh, I wish I had a better burn. Like, I'll wait till next time because I will see him again. Don't think I won't. We will all travel these roads again. So I will see him at some point. And yes, I might refer to him in my head as Tour de France. But he wouldn't consider that insulting, I'm sure. And it was a perfectly fair, fine thing for him to say. It just, you know, like, dude, I'm on edge. My feet hurt.
Well, you could just nickname him like One Ball or something.
No. He nailed me good. I mean, it was appropriate what he said. So, you know, I had to find something.
He was folks?
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, if I knew, I would say, well, your mom's an alcoholic or something, you know, or at least my uncle didn't touch me. But, you know, since I don't know any of these things, because he's a stranger, and he had no obvious deformities for me to make fun of. Yeah, big nose. I don't have a big nose. Fuck you, big nose.
You could have just played it off and said, my mother told me not to talk to strangers.
No. Yeah. I don't have that sort of thing loaded, and if I did, it'd be super creepy.
That's the point. Be super creepy.
Mother says I shouldn't talk to strangers. Mother?
Are you kidding? When I take the bus in the morning and I walk from the bus stop to work or from home to the bus stop, I look like I'm the most angry, curmudgeonly, horrible misfit of life.
I thought I did
too. People have actually crossed the street to get away from me.
See? And I thought I did too, but no, I was approachable and bullyable.
See, that's my goal. My goal is to keep people the hell away from me. I want people I don't want to talk to. I don't want pleasantries. I don't like none of that. I you know, I don't want to hear good morning. I don't, nothing. Just leave me alone. I got my headphones in. I'm listening to a podcast. I'm on my way to work.
Oh, yeah. No. I had to pull my headphones off my ear to actually hear what he was saying.
No, see, that's where you should have just pretended your music was too loud and you didn't hear him. See, you engaged. That was the problem. See, us introverts know better.
Like, I guess.
Since my new job last year, I've had to take a whole ton of training classes. And of course, these aren't one-on-one training classes. These are group training classes with other trainees, in which case I'm thrust into these groups where I have to be interactive with strangers. It's
the worst.
The longest, most arduous kind of training because I actively disengage at that point. At the point where you tell me I have to find somebody else in the room who you don't know and go learn three things about them.
Oh, dear.
No, I don't want to. Like, you're giving a class about inclusion and diversity, but you're not being inclusive of the introverts who wish to be exclusive. So on all the little course evaluations that they give me to fill out, I always put down, you force the introverts into positions that they don't want.
Oh, that's funny. Well, so, as somebody who used to have panic attacks going to meetings, I went to a meeting this last week, and it was great. It was the first time I knew it was coming. It was full of, like, fairly big wigs. I had to say my name. It was all very, you know, it was like a textbook example of something that would have triggered a panic attack early on in my panic lifestyle. Not lifestyle, my anxiety situation. But this time was great. Maybe it's because I felt like a total junior member of the group. But still, it was fine.
See, I don't have any problem with meetings or being in a meeting where I have to participate and or incorporate any of my skills to interject in the meeting. That I don't have a problem with because I have knowledge and skill set to accommodate. But it's where I'm thrust into the unknown and having to spout some kind of learned education back at an instructor and a bunch of people that I don't know. That's like a seventh circle of hell.
True. So.
Agreed.
Okay.
I was cataloging all the times I've been in trainings, and the first thing I do is when they give you the training materials, is I look through. I'm like, okay. Oh, a test. Fine. Okay. Oh, group exercise. Fuck.
Yeah, that's me.
I remember going to a training early on. Fairly early on. It was probably 10 years or more ago, and one of my coworkers, I'll try to keep it vague, did the I Dream of Jeannie, folding your arms and nodding your head. And, cause his, you know, we were being, the instructor was calling on us to go and do like role playing. And he just did the I Dream of Jeannie thing and said, I'm invisible. I won't get called on. That is some bold, like the secret kind of shit.
Did it work?
It did. He didn't get called on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fuck, that's what I've been doing wrong all this time.
Oh, just give an idea of the genie thing. If it doesn't work, you say, genie!
Now I'll have to move to the Samantha Bewitched nose twitch.
I can't do that. With the pencil, maybe. They'd get the wrong idea, though.
I've also been in the situation where I've had to give a few trainings. And, yeah. I always look for the people who are trying to look away. That was a trick I learned from an old professor of mine.
They called on you every time.
If you were looking at the clock or if he was asking a question and you were looking down pretending to do something, he would definitely call on you.
Forced engagement. That's not never good.
Mm-hmm.
But turns out it's a skill you need to learn. I'll tell my daughter, this is just bullshit you have to do to be alive. Because as your grandfather used to say, I'm projecting already.
Wow.
as your grandfather says, life is just one damn thing after another.
Well, I don't know why, but I was thinking about this the other day, and I think maybe it's just like the natural evolution of each generation, but I think our children are going to have a lot more tools at their disposal, a lot more sort of tricks of the trade. Because when we were growing up, it was just, oh, he's shy. And the encouragement was, stop being shy. go talk. Go say something. But now I think
there's recognition of the types of learning and personality differences.
Yeah, I have a lot better comprehension of what it means to be. There's a difference between being introverted and being shy, and you need to sort of approach it differently. And being introverted just means you can do it. You can interact, but it's just going to drain you emotionally, and you have to be aware of that and be able to encounter that. But you can also learn sort of conversational tricks that are helpful beyond stop being shy, go talk.
Oh yeah, no, definitely. You know, it's you can game it out. And you know, okay, so mm-hmm. I don't have any, although I should, other than nodding and smiling along, I don't have really anything locked and loaded for being called fat. But I do have the phrase, hey, slide it on down the spectrum, Rain Man, for people who are acting a little weird. This is not something you should actually say, but I always want to say it. Anyway, not very thoughtful.
Let me know how that goes at work.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the thing. Although I have said the phrase, maybe you find it therapeutic to yell at me, but we're not getting anywhere. So let's just start this conversation again. Turns out that sounds kind of like an asshole when you play it back on a tape later. It sounds like you're actually...
It seems a little bitchy.
Yeah, yeah. And along that, it does not seem... you're trained to do things like, okay, I want to acknowledge that I've heard... Like repeating back what people say is... It's comforting because it tells them that they have been heard. And it also buys you a little time to work your magic in other ways. Yeah, saying, hey, everything you've said to me may have sounded fine in your head, but really you're just being a jackass, so let's just move past this. Actually, that's the most kind way of saying it. Normally it's like, let's just get to the point, jackwagon. All these things can get played back, and it doesn't sound great on the other end. Whenever I try to veer off script, it's not usually a good idea.
I once asked a coworker of mine... And it was a genuine question. Like, I was genuinely curious, but it did not come across well. Because she just kept talking at me and talking at me and talking at me and asking me questions that I was sort of cataloging, waiting for her to take a breath so I could answer. But she wouldn't stop. And so it made me wonder, like, my thought process was, are you actually getting satisfaction out of this conversation? Like, I understand our personalities are different, but is this going well for you? Like, I genuinely want to know, because I'm not saying anything back. She just kept talking and talking and talking. So that was going around in my head. What actually came out was, is this working for you? Which did not go over well, and she took offense to it, which baffled me for a second until I realized that probably didn't sound the way I had intended it to sound.
Did she look shocked and then lean in and say, "You need to slide down the spectrum, Rain Man, and start that again"?
No, but I could tell. She was no longer having a pleasant conversation with me.
Well, it's while you were describing that, I thought I was thinking, what would you know? First of all, I would not be maintaining eye contact for anything past the first couple of words. If she started to ask a series of questions, I would be looking for a pen and I'd be writing stuff down. Whether or not it related to her or not didn't matter. But I would be sitting there and kind of writing while she was talking and kind of giving minimal encouragers. Until she was done, but never looking at her at all. So she would never get any satisfaction of me, other than continues to, or whatever, you know, nodding along or whatever. Sometimes that allows people, when they can stop talking, when they realize they're not going to get an answer, and they just walk away. Or at the end of a series of questions, when you say, no, I don't think so.
That's funny. I used to do the exact opposite and not break eye contact until I was counseled that came off as aggressive and creepy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just trying to be respectful.
Yeah.
And attentive.
Hey, I learned from Michael Caine that when you look somebody in the eye, just pick one eye, because you look like a crazy person if you're trying to look at both eyes.
I thought it was that he switched which eye he looked at because it made him appear shifty.
Oh, maybe. Michael Caine.
Yeah.
He's an actor, as it turns out. He has tricks.
So the aviator, bloated and too long.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. You know, you said that the ending, and we're going to skip to the end of the plot just for a second while I remember, but the way of the future. That's just an Apocalypse Now ripoff. The horror. Like, this is bullshit. That's like, sorry, I was going to call him Stanley, but Martin. Call him Marty. No, call me Marty. Do you know that story about this movie?
No.
Martin Scorsese has people call him Marty, but John C. Reilly couldn't do it. He thought it was disrespectful, so he insisted on calling him Mr. Scorsese, which drove Martin Scorsese crazy. So by the end of the movie, they actually had to have a thing where John C. Reilly had to call him Marty, and it worked out at the end.
We should really talk about Boogie Nights.
I have never seen Boogie Nights.
John C. Reilly is so great in Boogie Nights. He can do so much more than he was allowed to do in The Aviator.
Oh, have you guys seen Walk Hard: The Legend of Yes. Dewey Cox? I love that movie. It's got some Adam Sandler bits into it, but I love the music.
Was that a James Mangold movie?
I don't know. All I know is the song Royal Jelly is like the best Bob Dylan song ever.
Mailboxes drip like lampposts in the twisted birth canal of the Coliseum. Rimjob fairy teapots mask the temper tantrum. Oh, say, can you see 'em? Stuffed cabbage is the darling of the laundromat. And the sorority mascot sat with the lumberjack. Pressing, passing, stinging half-synthetic fabrications of his time. The mouse with the overbite explain how the rabbits were ensnared. In the skinny, scanny self-thrash, the apothecary diplomat inside the three-eyed monkey within inches of his toaster oven lies in my mind. I'm half blind, my inner ref is mostly deaf, I'm smelling pears, if you care. My sense of taste is wasted on the phosphorescent orange peels of San Francisco axe-encrusted frenzy. So let me touch you, let me touch you. Let me touch you, let me touch you, where the royal jelly gets made.
Anyway, The Aviator. So, no opening credits. Right there, bullshit auteur move. I was cataloging them from the beginning. After the weird washing scene, I'm like, oh no. So we get the weird washing, and then we show Howard Hughes, Leonardo DiCaprio, who is a good actor, but didn't like his face in half of this movie. I didn't like his haircut. Maybe it was period appropriate, but it also seemed maybe early 90s appropriate too, so that made it seem like old and silly. I don't know. Were you offended by his hair?
I didn't care about his hair.
Brother Jay?
No, I thought it was fine.
Okay, wrong. So he's directing the film Hell's Angels, and he hired Noah Dietrich, played by John C. Reilly, to run Hughes Tool Corporation while he continued working in this film. Because this is an age where you are a Renaissance man. I mean, all the heroes are Renaissance men. He's a film director. He's an aviator that set world records. He's a successful businessman. And the John C. Reilly character, I think, is great. He continues to tell him that, well, this is, you know, this seems very impractical, sir. And throughout the movie, he's told, doesn't matter, just do it. Okie dokie.
And he really tries his best throughout the movie. He's really earning his money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so Howard Hughes, he is an auteur director, too. He films this movie. He discovers the magic of clouds and does these crazy aviation things, which I thought was pretty great, but I also thought was CGI and kind of bullshit.
Yeah. The effects didn't hold up. They looked pretty terrible.
Yeah.
And it's funny that he was filming all of that live, and to recreate it for this movie, they had to use computer graphics.
Yes, the irony. Rich in irony.
Well, it's pretty, for insurance purposes, it was probably cheaper to do CGI.
Oh, yeah, most definitely.
Yeah. Because how many of those planes are still airworthy? And how many plane crashes happen at those plane show exhibitions?
Well, not only that, but during the actual filming, don't they mention this, like, four pilots died during the making of the film or something? So, yep. You know, that's part of it. And, you know, it was an impressive scene, even though it was CGI. And it's impressive that he shot the whole movie, went tremendously over budget, so much so that he was mocked in the press. And then he saw the jazz singer, which is one of the first talkies, and decided he needed to shoot the whole thing for sound because Hell's Angels was shot for silent movie. And so he did. And it took him another year of shooting and cost nearly $2 million or over $2 million to shoot it again. And turns out, though, it was a huge hit. And I did not know, is this accurate, that old-timey flash bulbs you just threw on the ground when you were done, and so stars walked on them on the red carpet?
Nah, sure is what it looked like.
Yeah, seemed crazy dangerous. Are you looking that up, Brother Jay?
I am indeed.
Old-timey flash bulbs. So, yeah, so he's a weirdo to begin with. We know he's got little tics and personality things, and you know, but I just figured he was a weirdo because he was a pompous pilot. No, turns out he's got other issues. And we meet Katharine Hepburn, who Drew hates.
Mm-hmm. I did hate that character. She seemed really annoying.
Well, okay, but why did you think she was annoying? What factors?
She was too quippy. She really seemed up her own ass about everything she said. I didn't like the affect in her voice. I didn't like her mannerisms. It was all over the top.
You think it was over the top, or do you think? Because I see that as a fairly accurate representation of Katharine Hepburn, who was, like Spencer Tracy, kind of over the top. You know, like, well, Spencer also, Tracy didn't speak normally either.
Also, in some ways, I think she was really trying to compensate by breaking into a man's world in a very male-dominated society, a male-dominated career, where she was trying to establish herself as a power.
Maybe, but she was going about it in a really annoying fashion.
Well, she's trying to be one of the guys.
Well, because she couldn't be a pretty ingenue. She right. was super tall and all elbows, right?
Correct.
But they got along famously. He taught her how to fly.
That was pretty cute.
A scene that went on too long, though.
Yeah, and if you're talking about ripping off Apocalypse Now, that scene totally ripped off Superman.
Yeah, and because so I love the Hughes, not the Hughes family. The Hepburns were great, although yeah, just uncomfortable. But it's, literally, I did think of the French plantation scene. That we don't need this. It's fine, but we don't need it. He has plenty of identifiable character traits from these other scenes. So he decides he's going to break into the world of commercial aviation.
He just buys TWA on a whim.
Yeah, and. During that time, he also flew the H-1 racer plane and crashed into a beet field, became the fastest man. And then he flies around the world in 4 days, which shattered the previous world record. all while his main business, I guess, nemesis to be, Mr. Juan Trip, who I had never heard of before. Have you ever heard of Juan Trip?
Nope.
Apparently he owned Pan American Airways. And Juan Trip, who, because he's Alec Baldwin, seemed pretty smooth and didn't seem particularly evil.
Well, he had a supervillain's office.
Most definitely, yeah. Yeah, it turns out you can't have a globe like that without being a supervillain. He was Gene Hackman's Lex Luthor, which also rips off Superman.
And weren't his walls like a cityscape?
Oh, maybe. He came, again, he did a good job, but he came off as something of a...
He had some cityscapes and some world maps.
Yeah, and then we meet Senator Owen Brewster, Alan Alda, who I guess Senator Brewster in real life was actually super ugly, but Alan Alda chose to give him the inner ugliness rather than try to, like, put on an ugly face. I mean, not that
Alan Alda was my favorite part of this movie.
Oh, he's great in everything.
I love this, the scene where he's preparing for his dinner with Hughes.
Yes.
So great.
The big old fingerprint on the glass.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's some diabolical stuff. But even like when we meet at the Coconut Grove, where we see the succession of Wainwrights, the first singer we see is Rufus Wainwright. The second singer we see is his dad, Loudon Wainwright, the third. And then his sister is the third singer we see in the movie. In those crappy-ass auteur, like, camera sweeps to the band. Which, the first one I thought was kind of fun. And by the time we got to the third one, I'm like, you're going to do that again? And maybe I'm being overcritical, but I'm critical. It's like, you're doing a thing. I get you're doing a thing, but what I want to see in a movie is I don't want to see you doing your thing. I want to be swept away.
No, I agree. Watching this movie, it felt self-indulgent and masturbatory.
There you go. Those were the two words I was thinking of. But, yeah, so eventually, Katharine Hepburn meets Spencer Tracy. Well, we get to meet Jude Law as what, Errol Flynn, who fucks with Hughes's peas. That was the example of one kind of film, like the peas looked a little blue, and that's because that's the tinting that you would get from the film of the time. Anyway, yeah. So Errol Flynn messed with his peas and screwed up his whole day.
See, now that was a scene that I thought DiCaprio did a really good job at, like trying to hold it together. But the audience is able to see that he's not, even though Hepburn is the only one who's noticing it in scene. So I really like that. So if there was only like one scene like that, it would have been very effective. But like you said before, every scene is like that. And they just hammer it home again and again and again.
So soon, we can kiss Katharine Hepburn goodbye, at least for the most part. Because she meets Spencer Tracy. And if you know about film and history, you know that they had a love affair that lasted blah, 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 blah. If you don't, then, then she Wikipedia. Fell in love with somebody else. Yeah, they don't really go into who he is. You know, so there's some good dialogue where she tries to say, no, this is beneath you, Howard. Be civilized. And he's like, no, you're breaking up with me. You're a movie star, nothing more. And then he interviews his next girlfriend in a very creepy way.
Yeah, the whole hangar scene, that was spooky.
Yeah. But then we meet Ava Gardner. Like I said, I loved Kate Blanchett. I loved Kate Beckinsale. It was great. And then we have the diversion where he has to fight the MPAA over the rating of his movies about tits. And then we get this heavy-duty Pan Am versus TWA conflict. And this is where we start to get, because there's all these deadlines and things going on, we see he's starting to fall apart. His relationships are falling apart. His psyche is falling apart.
This is where he locks himself in the theater room?
Yes.
For weeks, months? It's not really clear.
Well, actually, before that's where he crashed the other plane, right?
The XF-11.
He takes the XF-11 out for a test flight and crashes into a residential area and nearly dies. Should have probably died. Would have made for a shorter movie. So this is where he's already, I think, tapped Ava Gardner's phones. And I do like this exchange where she's like, "You're listening to my phone calls?" And he's like, no, I would never do that. I read the transcripts, that's all. It's like, great. She gets mad and says, "What do you want to know? I was screwing Artie Shaw. I screwed Sinatra. You bet. Everyone told me you're a goddamn lunatic, but I didn't listen. It's no wonder Katie Hepburn dumped you on her demented ass." And he's like, "Shut your goddamn mouth," and knocks her over. But she gets up and knocks him over back. I was great. I was cheering. I wanted her to club him to death with her shoe. Because also it would have made for a shorter movie. But, I guess that's after his crash. But yeah, that's where the FBI starts to take apart his house. I think that's where
multiple times.
Yeah. And so that's where he basically locks himself in his movie screening room and just watches movies like on constant loop, naked.
Put up in his naked private projector.
Yep.
And his milk bottles of pee.
Yeah, drinking milk and peeing in the bottles. And then I love the when Ava Gardner visits him and he's got tape all over the walls.
Yeah, it's to protect from the germs. Germ-free zone.
That is great. So the ladies of his life try to coax him out. Finally, Ava Gardner coaxes him out because he's being subpoenaed to go before Congress. And this is where he's got to pull his shit together. So he dons his Brad Pitt costume and goes to Washington. And, you know, I thought the courtroom scene was fine. You know, it's well shot, well acted. You kind of knew where it was going to go. I mean, as some podcasters have said, it's a biopic.
It's a total ripoff of Godfather Part 2.
Exactly. Also, Mr. Smith goes to Washington. Also, A Few Good Men. He should have told Alan Alda he couldn't handle the truth. But they have a party afterward. We go home. We have this, by the way, this invented character, this scientist he befriends, and he started with tits and ends up on the Spruce Goose.
Oh, he was the meteorologist.
Yes.
He was the one who was supposed to find him the clouds yes. that looked like tits.
Yes. Big milky breasts.
Full of milk.
Yes. So, so we see this Spruce Goose thing. And, again, it's CGI, and we knew where it was going to go. And to me, it may be an incredible feat of engineering or whatever, but it seemed like, I don't know, it's weird. Because this movie doesn't end with the end. The movie didn't really begin with his beginning of his life. They kind of skip to the aviator part of it, which I guess is the reason why it's called The Aviator. But
yeah,
but it ends with him basically losing his shit at this congratulations party after they fly the Hercules.
Formulating Hercules. Opinion as to what the future of the whole industry that we headed toward.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, no.
No, he was a visionary.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did want to say, you know, the Spruce Goose flying giant plane in front of a green screen. Total ripoff of Sky Captain and the World of Tomorrow.
Most definitely.
But by the way, DiCaprio as Hughes has some of the best scoliosis at Brewster during the hearings.
Yes. And then, because it wasn't creepy enough, at the end of this movie, he flashes back to his being washed by his mom scene.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope it was a thing. And that the quarantine thing was a real quote from him, because I didn't need to hear that again twice.
Well, I was a germaphobe from his childhood because of the whole cholera thing, right? That's why he carried the bar of soap with him everywhere.
Yeah, well, they did allude to the fact that the Negroes were going to give him the diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that Scorsese did weird things with the timeline throughout this movie. Like, early on, I don't know if it was during the scene with the peas, but there's actually, like, a flash of him sort of naked and bearded later.
Yes.
And then they jumped back and forth between the flying of the spruce goose and the hearing a couple times. It was just really out of place. It was like you've mentioned, Eric, it was like Scorsese just was like, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to use all the techniques in this movie.
I need 30 cameras.
Yeah, I mean, that is the thing. Nobody's going to say no, right? Although he did have to come up, but I think he spent $500,000 of his own money to finish this movie. Scorsese did. Very Howard Hughes-y, actually.
Life imitates art.
Yeah.
Do you know what studio he's making his next movie for?
No.
Netflix.
Excellent. I hear that Adam Sandler's, he has a role in a dramatic movie that he's really good at. In this, the latest movie he's in. I mean, he's got that deal with Netflix for all those string of comedies that are going to be horrible. Of course, I can't think of the name of the movie, so listeners, write in.
Were we talking about the fact that Adam Sandler picks movie roles based on going on vacation? That's how he's picked his movie roles?
I wouldn't doubt it.
He gets scripts, and if he can get a movie role, a place where he wants to go on vacation, then that's how he picks his movies. Otherwise, he's not doing anything.
Eric Roberts has talked about that.
Ah.
A lot of his later movie roles are just, if he can get them to agree to like a relaxing shooting schedule, and it's on a fun location that he can take the family to, he'll do whatever.
Yeah.
Well, hey, whatever works, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I don't want to dog too much on Adam Sandler because I don't happen to like the movies that he makes for the most part. But as I was telling my wife, I think he's actually a pretty good actor. I think I'm just disappointed when he takes like the lowest rung of the comedy bar.
Well, certain Adam Sandler movies have a place, and that's his bad comedies. But he's been in a couple good comedy roles, at least in my opinion. I really like Dig 50 First Dates and The Wedding Singer. Those are both really strong, in my opinion. Lil Nicky is okay. And then there's the, you know, like The Water Boy and all that, which are, you know, they're fine once, but rewatch, not so much.
Well, okay, I disagree. The Water Boy's worth watching at least 4 or 5 times. But... It's a movie with Fairuza Balk and Henry Winkler. Come on. Yeah, like, I liked him in Spanglish. That was pretty good. I have not seen Punch-Drunk Love, but I'm assured that he is good in that. There's that movie that, Love, Rain or Me or whatever.
The Don Cheadle movie?
Yeah, on the scooter after 9/11. I've only seen the trailer. No interest in the movie.
I've seen it.
So... awards. This is where Kate Blanchett won her Oscar. It's the first time somebody had won an Oscar for portraying somebody who had won an Oscar.
Wow, that's very meta.
Yeah. And guess who was nominated? The movie was nominated for Best Picture. Do you know who, you know, because Best Picture is actually like a producer's award. Do you know who was, who were the producers?
Who?
Michael Mann and Graham King.
Oh, that's right. I did see Michael Mann. Yeah.
Michael Mann was going to direct this movie, I think, originally.
It would have also have been 3 hours, but yeah. A much different tone.
More helicopters, less planes. Leonardo DiCaprio was nominated for leading actor. Alan Alda for supporting actor. Martin Scorsese for directing. And John Logan for original screenplay. I don't have the list of the winners for that year, but...
the Oscars for what year?
It would have been probably... 2005? It came out in 2004, so it would have been 2005 Oscar Academy Awards, I think.
Good grief.
Oh, some of the other actors.
Yeah, so 2005.
Okay.
Best Picture was Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Better than this.
Best Cinematographer, The Aviator. Best Visual Effects, Spider-Man 2. Best Supporting Actor, Morgan Freeman, Million Dollar Baby.
Yeah.
I've never seen Million Dollar Baby.
It's great. Once.
Best Film Editing, The Aviator. Best Actor, Jamie Foxx for Ray. Best Director, Clint Eastwood, Million Dollar Baby. Best Costume Design, The Aviator. Best Actress, Hilary Swank, Million Dollar Baby. Best Production Design, The Aviator. Best Sound Editing, The Incredibles. Best Makeup, Lemony Snicket's.
Does it say the nominees for Best Picture? Million Dollar Baby won, but it was up against...
So let's see. Ray. Best Picture was...
Million Dollar Baby, Aviator, Finding Neverland, Ray, and Sideways.
Wow. Yeah, they probably picked the right one.
Also out that year, Hotel Rwanda, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Being Julia.
Yeah, this is before they had 10 movies.
Collateral.
Collateral.
Yeah. Hey, big year for Michael Mann.
Sideways.
Yeah.
Thomas Hayden Church got nominated for Best Supporting Actor for Sideways.
How about Paul Giamatti?
Mm-mm.
Was he not nominated for anything?
Nope. But Virginia Madsen got Best Supporting Actress nomination for Sideways.
So who else was up for... But you know what? I think I was disappointed because I thought she should have won that. But now I can see why, because I hadn't seen The Aviator. Who else is up for Best Supporting Actress?
Actress, so it was Cate Blanchett, Virginia Madsen for Sideways, Natalie Portman for Closer, Sophie Okonedo for Hotel Rwanda, and Laura Linney for Kinsey.
Ah. Who is up for Best Supporting Actor, besides Alan Alda?
So, Jamie Foxx in Collateral, Morgan Freeman, the winner for Million Dollar Baby.
Jamie Foxx was up for Best Actor and Best Supporting Actor?
This is Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah, but didn't he win for Best Actor? For Ray?
Yes.
For Ray.
So he was up for Best Supporting and Best Actor in the same awards?
Yes.
Dude. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Clive Owen for Closer and Thomas Hayden Church for Sideways.
I have Closer, but I've never seen Closer. Connie wanted me to watch it for one specific scene. But she also wants me to watch The Piano, and I'm not going to watch that either. Although that's not true.
Clive Owen and Natalie Portman. I'd be in for that.
No, it's supposed to be good.
It's also got Jude Law in it, right?
Maybe. Does it? And is it Closer or Closer?
I have no idea.
Yeah, I haven't seen it, so I don't know.
And Julia Roberts is the fourth one.
For?
Closer. It's a movie about two couples. Julia Roberts, Jude Law, Natalie Portman, and Clive Owen.
Ah, excellent. So The Aviator. Brother Jay, what's your verdict?
I like this movie. Like I said, I'm not opposed to long movies. And while you felt that the exposition was too elongated, I kind of enjoyed that it kind of displayed his manic attention, over attention to detail. So I would give this movie probably a B minus. It, you know, it's not going to be something I'm going to rewatch probably, but for entertainment purposes, it was pretty entertaining and you know, it gave a lot of information and had some good effects. So,
Brother Drew, was it worth it?
No. This movie is too long. It's not good enough to sit through just to catch a couple of the good scenes here or there. It's not memorable. I watched it a couple days ago, and I feel like I'm already starting to forget it. I don't see any reason you really need to watch this movie, unless you're just dying to see Howard Hughes portrayed in a movie. Go watch Collateral instead.
Yeah, I might agree with that, actually. And, you know, I thought it had some great performances. I really did. But just overall, I thought that the Stanley Kubrickness of it took me out of it from the very beginning, and I just never recovered from that. Like I said, I love Kate Beckinsale. I love Alec Baldwin. I love Alan Alda. I thought Kate Blanchett deserved her Academy Award. I'm always happy to see John C. Reilly. I liked lots of individual parts of it, and the story was interesting, but I just thought the long parts were too long. I thought it needed a good editing. So if I were to grade it, I'd probably give it a B-, but I was expecting like an A-. I mean, this was a big movie at the time. This was an Academy Award nominee.
Especially with considering all the talent in it.
Yeah. So it makes me, I don't know, it makes me question what I think about, like, big biopics. or biopic. I can't imagine calling it a biopic. It's ridiculous. So housekeeping? Drew, let's start with you. Do you have any housekeeping? So behind the scenes, this is recorded May 25th and released a little bit later because we snuck in the Roger Moore tribute.
Yeah, no particular housekeeping, but I did look up based on the Jamie Foxx conversation. There's actually a Wikipedia entry for a list of actors nominated for 2 Academy Awards in the same year. It's happened more often than you'd think.
Oh, do tell.
It happened a few times, 30s and 40s, but starting with in the 80s, Jessica Lange was nominated for both categories in 1982.
Hold on, was that
in 1988?
Jessica Lange, was that for?
Tootsie and Frances.
Oh, okay.
In 1988, Sigourney Weaver was nominated for both Gorillas in the Mist and Working Girl.
Uh-huh.
In 92, Pacino was nominated for Scent of a Woman and Glengarry Glen Ross. The next year, 1993, it happened twice for 2 women, Holly Hunter for The Piano and the Firm, and Emma Thompson for Remains of the Day and In the Name of the Father. Then it didn't happen for another 9 years. In 2002, Julianne Moore was nominated for Far From Heaven and The Hours. 2 years after that, it was Jamie Foxx. And 3 years after that, it was Kate Blanchett for Elizabeth, The Golden Age, and I'm Not There.
And nobody's won, right? Nobody's won for both acting?
No.
Okay. Yeah, because that would be a thing.
No, but a couple of them have lost both.
Oh, well, I'm sure. Probably most of them, huh? Or maybe not.
Sigourney Weaver didn't win for either. Emma Thompson didn't win. Julianne Moore didn't win. And Cate Blanchett didn't win.
Yeah. Well, our mother would appreciate that Julianne Moore didn't win. My mother's not a fan of Julianne Moore.
No?
No.
I was not aware of this.
Oh, doesn't like her just by sight.
kind of like our father and Whoopi Goldberg.
I didn't know that.
He apparently has a visceral response to Whoopi Goldberg.
That's funny. I'm trying to think if there's somebody like that I don't like. I'm sure there is. I just can't think of one off the top of my head. I mean, Drew is just Gina Davis.
Yeah. That's not based on aesthetics, though.
That's just acting quality?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
So you're not going to go see Beetlejuice, the sequel?
There's not Beetlejuice, the sequel.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure there might. If they could, they would.
Beetlejuice 2, Winona Ryder, and Michael Keaton already signed on.
Excellent. Both coming off of good showings. Michael Keaton is a dramatic actor. Well, I guess, what? Wasn't the Birdman thing, wasn't that actually supposed to be a comedy?
He's going to be in the Spider-Man movie coming up.
Is he playing Batman? I guess he wouldn't, because that's a cross-pollination thing, right? Cross-contamination.
Playing the Vulture.
The Vulture. I'm so far removed. I don't know if I told you, but I watched The Avengers on Mother's Day, and I liked it. I mean, I'd seen it before, but I'd remembered that, you know, how fun it was to have all those actors and how well they worked together, how well the action worked with all the rest of it. I enjoyed it quite a bit. Have not seen The Avengers 2, but I guess that's on my list at some point. But otherwise, I'm not super excited about any of the movies coming up. Although, I still think Wonder Woman has a really great trailer.
It does. Oh, I watched a movie just for pleasure. This week I watched Logan.
Oh wow,
is that Old Man Wolverine?
Yeah. It's really good.
Like, is it like an actual R-rated movie, like harder R than the rest of the Marvel movies, except for Deadpool maybe?
Yeah. No, Deadpool is like a fun R. This is like a real R. And I bought it on iTunes. And one of the extras, it's like the equivalent of like the black and chrome edition for Mad Max Fury Road. You can watch the black and white version. They call it Logan Noir. I'm not really sure that's necessary, but it was good. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
Cool.
Patrick Stewart is amazing in it.
I love Patrick Stewart. He is the greatest. He
is great.
Yeah. He plays the poop emoji in the Emojis movie, I think.
He does.
I watched actually a movie today because I have a sick daughter. I think she actually has influenza. But she's on the road to recovery, but it's been like 3 days where she's just been like mildly feverish and coughy and doesn't want to eat anything. Today she's in a little bit better mood, but still sick. So I've been sort of just hanging out the last couple of days. And so, I watched Stephen King's The Night Flyer, which is Miguel Ferrera.
Wow.
And it's, Ferrer. Is it not Ferrera? Miguel Ferrer, Jose Ferrer. I guess you're right. Yeah. Anyway, it's a Stephen King story that involves a tabloid journalist who actually finds, a vampire who's flying into airports late at night and killing people. Not a spoiler. You know that from the beginning. I think on the cover, it has a picture of the actual vampire. And in the movie, you don't see him until like the last 5 minutes of the movie. So that's cheating when you put it on the cover. It's not great. Anyway, it is a folks level movie. Don't get me wrong. It's not a great movie. But it sure was fun, and he's always fun. If it wasn't so violent, it would be like a your typical like Lifetime or Sci-Fi level of movie.
Is it on par with the Bronson Pinchot version of the Langoliers?
Yeah, well, Langoliers was actually a TV movie.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's on the same level. You're absolutely right. And probably is, you know, I only saw The Langoliers once, and it wasn't my favorite story from that. I think it was Far Past Midnight, maybe. But it was fine. I always like Stephen King stuff. I mean, you know, it's not all trucks. And I have The Star Chamber I'll be watching. I told you I saw Absence of Malice, and it's probably coming off of the calendar, actually.
It's not that bad.
Well, it's not bad. It just doesn't hold up. I mean, it's got one interesting argument, the whole absence of malice argument about journalism, but it's kind of dated and it's not. Yeah, it just didn't, you know, that was fine, but it's probably not calendar worthy. Although I think I have it on the calendar the same day as Legal Eagles to do like together on the same pod. So maybe that's worth it. We'll see. I remember seeing Legal Eagles. What was the Ruthless People? And what was the running movie with Billy Crystal and Gregory Hines?
I know the one you're talking about.
Of those three movies I saw in one day, I think Ruthless People was my favorite. But we'll see how.
Yeah, Ruthless People with the Dustbusters.
Oh, Ruthless People with everything.
Running Scared.
Running Scared. There you go. We'll see. There's more. Probably the next day or two, I'll be watching more movies for pleasure because while she's sick, she doesn't want, you know, she wants to like us to be in the same room that she's in, which seems fair enough, but means I don't get as much stuff done around the house. So, Brother Jay, any housekeeping? Toenail talk? It's toenail time.
Everybody. No. So I started. I've seen the first two episodes of Twin Peaks.
Oh, do tell. Twin Peak talk. I heard the first was a little rough, but they get much better.
Well, and hopefully, because the first two episodes are batshit crazy. I'm lost, and I consider myself pretty well versed in the Twin Peaks Unisphere. So, I don't know what's going on yet.
No, if anybody has dipped, it should be you, right? I mean, you've consumed most of it. I mean, you consumed all of the movies and all the TV.
Yeah.
And at least one of the books. Two of the books.
Three of the books. So, I will continue watching it, but the first two episodes, I will warn people now, like spoilers. If you don't want spoiled Twin Peaks, don't listen. Like, just stop listening now. But, two episodes in, and we've already seen Sarah Palmer, and we've seen Leland, and we've seen Laura, Dale Cooper, we've seen.
Are these all in flashback, I assume, since it's supposed to be 25 years later?
No.
So they kind of retcon him back into the story?
Well, so, I can spoil it for you if you want, but basically Dale Cooper is trapped in the Black Lodge, so...
And there's a Black Lodge and a White Lodge?
Yes.
Black Lodge and a Red Lodge? I forget.
No, it's the Black Lodge and the White Lodge. But so Dale's doppelganger is in the real universe, and Dale's good spirit is locked in the Black Lodge. Laura Palmer's in the Black Lodge. Leland is in the Black Lodge. Sarah Palmer is alive and well. We got to see Shelley.
That's awesome.
And James. And Hawk. And the Log Lady. And then Andy and girlfriend. I can't believe I just forgot her name. And then there was new characters, of course.
Matthew Lillard, right? Shaggy?
Yes. Yeah. So it's been interesting. I don't understand what's going on yet, which of course I don't imagine we will, for many, many, many more episodes, maybe not till the second season. So, the first four episodes are already available. We've watched two. I've got two left to watch.
How many episodes is this? Is this eight episodes or?
I want to say there's 13 maybe.
Oh, wow.
But okay. Maybe there's only eight. I'm not sure. And I'm not positive.
Is it just called Twin Peaks?
Yep, it's just called Twin Peaks. Hmm. It's got familiar scenery, got familiar cinematography, you know, same music, different story, of course. But I don't know. It's hard to know where he's going with it, but then it's hard to know, you know, where he was going the first time. It is a very different. It's a very different story, though. I think that's one of the problems. Is that there's 18 episodes in the first season. But I think the problem is in the original Twin Peaks series, it was very much about the town and the trauma of losing somebody. And losing the small town feeling and the community and this murder that swept through and people dealing with grief and dealing with the process and dealing with each other. And this is removed from all of that so far. So it may tie back later into the original, but so far it's not tapping into any of that emotional connection for me. So what I'm getting from it is there's characters that I recognize and there's story that they're trying to build on that I recognize. But so far, at this point, I'm not invested in it. Like if it ended and I didn't get to see the rest of it, it wouldn't bother me.
Oh, and as a fan, that's a disappointment, right?
Yeah. But like I said, it may be that I, you know, I don't understand it yet. Don't get me wrong. It was nice to see familiar characters. Certainly the log lady, because, you know, the actress died at some point during the filming. So that was great to see her briefly. So I don't know how many episodes she'll remain in, but it was great to see her nonetheless. So we'll see. I'll continue to watch. I'm cautiously optimistic. Right now we get to see a bad Agent Cooper, which is interesting. There is because it's Cable, a lot of nudity, a lot of violence.
Wow.
Lots of death.
Yeah, there's been lots of murders already. Because that one was on network television, so.
Exactly. So.
Interesting. Huh, interesting. Well, keep us posted.
Yeah. Two more episodes this weekend. I have a 4-day weekend starting now. So I imagine we'll get through the other two episodes this weekend. So before the next podcast.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.